Not only help women, she helped men too. Just to let some of you know that, you know what I mean? But those of you who haven't heard Miss Evelyn speak, you're in for a treat. Miss Evelyn.
Yay.
Well, my name is Evelyn. I'm an alcoholic. And Ben, thank you so much for asking me. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here. And it's also an honor that you were able to stay sober for 4 years. What that means to me, someone who's been in the program as long as I have, you let me know that this program works. When people come in and stay, stick and stay, as they say, then it makes me know that it's worthwhile me being here as long as I'm here. So thank you so much. I appreciate you. Thank you. My name is Evelyn. I'm an alcoholic. And for many, many years, I used to use that term. I'd go into bars. I'm from Harlem, New York, born and raised in Harlem. Born in Harlem Hospital. You can't get no more Harlem than that. And I would go into the Blue Moon 3-for-1s, 2-for-1s in Harlem. They call them, because you can get 3 shorties for $1, 2 shorties for $1. And I didn't know what an alcoholic was. But I knew, I never had no money. That's number one. Never had no money. And trying to stay drunk and high with no money is no joke, okay? But I would go into the bars and I would say, I'm an alcoholic. And sure enough, somebody in there would buy me a drink, you know? So I was saying I was an alcoholic long before I knew what an alcoholic was. Today I know what an alcoholic is. I know what it means to be a sober alcoholic. And that is what I try to portray one day at a time. Now, when I give a talk and I say that I'm from Harlem, sometimes I can hear, it depends on the audience, you know, and people will say, oh, you know, I hear the little oohs and ahs, and I guess they say, you know, growing up in Harlem in the 50s and the 60s, they understood why I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, okay? But I'll tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I'm an only child. I don't have any brothers or sisters. And I grew up in a home with both parents who loved me. My parents were born and raised in Georgetown, South Carolina. And I imagine in the 20s and 30s, like a lot of African American families, they migrated to New York looking for a better way of life. My mother and father loved me, and I knew they loved me. They told me they loved me. They hugged me and kissed me every day. They woke me up in the morning with love, and they put me to bed with love. So how did I turn out to be one of the biggest alcoholics and cocaine addicts running around Harlem like a little animal? How did that happen? I'll tell you how it happened. At 12 years old, I stole some J.W. Dant from my first cousin after my parents had passed, and I fell in love. Now, if anybody in this room has ever been in love, you know what I mean. I took that drink, and I was in love. I was 12. I could not wait until the next weekend that I could go and steal another drink. My parents died 6 months apart. That's another thing that people will say, oh, you know, that's not the reason why I drank and drug. Again, I will tell you, it's because I fell in love with alcohol. But in those days, I'm 84 years young. I'll be 85 next year, okay? And in those days, I don't think my family knew anything about family wealth, child welfare or anything like that. If somebody in the family dies, and another family member got a bed or a pot, you just went over there, you slept in the bed, you ate out the same pot, you did the same things that the other family members did. But this family member, my first cousin, Laura May. You know, Southern people with them two names, Laura May. You know, that's what we call her, Laura May. You know, and she drank. Laura May is what we would call a weekend warrior. Laura May drank on Friday nights. No, Fridays starting around 5 o'clock. All night, Friday night. All night they drank, played cards, and drank. All day Saturday, they played cards, dancing, drinking. Come Sunday morning, no more drinking. I don't know how she did it. All them rock and roll records, we used to listen to the rock and roll records on the radio and on them big, you know, vinyl records. Off came the records, on came the gospels. Okay? You could hear gospels, them Dixie hummingbirds, all through the house, you know. And you would think she was so religious the way she would carry on with these gospels. And I had to get up. I went to Metropolitan Methodist Church, 9:30. I went to Sunday school, 11 o'clock. We stayed for 11 o'clock service. And that went on regardless of, and I lived like that up until I moved out of there. So it wasn't that I didn't know right from wrong, and I didn't know what God was, and I didn't know that God was a good God. I did. But like I said before, ladies and gentlemen, I fell in love. I fell in love with the alcohol and what it did for me and what it made me feel like. Now, mind you, I was not abused. Physically, sexually, emotionally, there was absolutely no reason for me to take a drink and behave as if they were going to stop manufacturing it after I took that drink, okay? Because once I started hoarding, I was 12 years old. I was in the eighth grade. And I would wait, in those days in Harlem, now kids can buy liquor, but in those days you had to get an adult to go in the liquor store. I was going to school in the eighth grade, and I would be late because I would have to get an adult to go in the liquor store and buy a half a pint of something. And I would drink that and try to get through the class. I don't know how I managed to get through junior high school. I remember they wouldn't let me walk. They told my cousin, they gave me a diploma, a junior high school diploma, but I had only been to school 39 days in the whole term. And my aunt said, well, where were you the rest of the time? I was behind the Apollo. I was at the Apollo, okay, following the Detroit Emeralds and the Four Tops and the Temptation. Don't let James Brown come. Don't let James. You can go in the Apollo at 10 o'clock in the morning and stay till 10 o'clock at night. So I used to do this. Drink cheap wine, go up on that third balcony in the Apollo and just stay there and listen to the same songs over and over. I fell in love with alcohol and did things. I'm not going to bore you because we all got our stories. We all know what we did when we drank. But a lot of the things that I did when I was drinking, I think about today. You know, I lived two lives today in Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't had a drink since May 19th, 1972. I'm 53 years sober. But it seems like when I come to meetings, it seems like only yesterday that I did some of those things because I could identify. I could identify with anybody when they're talking about what they did for alcohol and drugs. I was a blackout drinker. I was a bar drinker. So what would I do? I'd go in the bar, sit in the bar, and I think I'm sitting on the toilet stool, right? And I'm going to pee not once, not twice, two, three times. The bartender's going to come from behind the bar and tell me to get out. And then I'm going to curse him out like words you have never heard in your life. The other thing I learned about myself, I love bad things, bad boys, number one. Love, if you were working, I didn't have no use for no man that was going to work 9 to 5, okay? If you wasn't selling drugs, just stick up man. My husband was a second story man. Second story men is men who break into people's houses that on the second story. And I was a gun mall, if you want. I'd stay down. I'd be played. They used to call it Chicky. I'd play Chicky while he'd go in and rob houses, okay? And I did these things for years. I wasn't always drunk when I did them. It was very dramatizing for me. You know, the badder and the crookeder people were, the more I liked them. I can remember being, I don't know, before my parents died, I might have been about 6 or 7 years old. I'd go in the bathroom, get in the mirror, and just use curse words. Just curse. I let the curse words just roll off my lips. My mother would say, "What you doing in that bathroom talking to yourself?" She couldn't hear what I was saying, but I was practicing curse words because I said, "I'm going to curse somebody out when I go out in the street. I'm going to find somebody to curse out." So this was the kind of person I was long before I picked up the drink. So when I picked up the drink, believe me, you didn't want to know me. I was okay until that liquor hit my head. I remember we went to, I married a dope. My goal in life was to marry a dope dealer. I never had no intentions on marrying no man with no 9-to-5 job. So I married somebody who was a very unsuccessful dope dealer, okay? He stayed in Rikers Island. He stayed in jail. I was forever going over the ferry. We were married for 19 years. 17 of those years I spent going up to Dannemora, going up to Sing Sing, going to Rikers Island on that ferry, talking to him on that telephone with the glass partition. I spent more time talking to him in jail than I did than we did in the bedroom. He was always in jail. He was a very unsuccessful dope dealer. He couldn't stay out of jail, okay? And that's what I wanted. And I can remember when he made money, but we could never keep money because we were our own best customers, okay? We'd get something. And what did we do? We'd have to test it first to see if it was good. Okay. We started testing it on a Tuesday. Thursday, we still tested it to see whether it was good or not. Okay. So it was that kind of lifestyle that I had that, you know, I think about it today, how I live today and how I live then. It's like, it's different than day and night. Never bought nothing from the store. Always stole clothes. Always. There was nothing in my apartment that I had a receipt for. Nothing. If the police came in there and wanted a receipt for a lamp or a chair or something, we was all going to jail. Because everything in my house was hot. Everything fell off the truck. Nothing did we buy. Okay? And so we lived like that. I never went downtown. I didn't start buying clothes until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Because if I wanted something, I'd tell the junkie girl what I want, the size I want, the color I want. She'd go downtown and she'd steal it. If she didn't steal it, I'd go downtown and steal it, you know. So it was that kind of lifestyle that it was very difficult for me when I came into AA. Because I came into AA in 1960. I got sober in 71, but I came in 69. And I looked around the room. I'm 84 now, and I must have been like 19, 20 years old. And I looked around the room, and everybody in that room looked like they could be my grandmother or my great-grandmother or grandpa. I said, ain't no way in the world. I said, these old-ass people, they need to stop drinking. These are old people. And I'm not, you know, and I couldn't fathom. I said, what am I going to do on a Friday and Saturday night when everybody else in Harlem is getting high and partying? I'm going to be the only one in Harlem not drinking or drugging? You got to be out your mind. But ladies and gentlemen, I'll tell you, alcohol and drugs has a way of bringing you back in here, whether you want to come back or not. And I came back on my hands and knees. My sponsor, Liz Bailey, God rest her soul, died when she was 69 years sober. and she was 100, I think almost 101. And Liz went to meetings every day. That's why I go to meetings every day. See, the majority of us do what our sponsors do. My sponsor went to meetings every single day. And in the, when she was about, I guess about 90, and she could no longer walk, then she hung out with people that would take her to meetings. She was in a wheelchair. She always went to meetings. And so that's what I do today. That is how I learn. Because it isn't that I don't like the feeling of getting high. See, I never tell anybody I sponsor that I despise alcohol and cocaine. I don't despise it. I love it. I love it with a passion. I love it just as much today as I did 53 years ago. But I don't want the consequences that it comes with. And that's one of the reasons I stay away. I've been sober enough to know that one drink, one hit of coke, is going to take me back to where I came from. I have no delusions that I'm going to be able to drink or drug with impunity. And I don't care what comes down the pipe. I don't pick up a drink or a drug. Now, 53 years is a lifetime. I've had deaths. I've had lawsuits. I've had broken relationships. You name it, I've had it. But I have not found it necessary under any circumstances to pick up a drink because I don't want what comes with it. See, I never say I'm going to drink. I say I'm going to get drunk. I never tell myself, well, I'm going out. In fact, I haven't said I'm going out drinking in years. I always say I'm going out and I'm getting drunk. And when I'm drinking, people who know me know to leave me alone. Okay? When I am drinking, and I will tell people, I am getting drunk. Do not mess with me. I will kill you if you try to get between me and the next drink or drug. And so, like I always say, I am not a suicidal person. I have never been someone who talked about, I want to slip my wrist or stick my head in somebody's oven. I ain't never had no, never hear me say that. But I'll drink 2/5 of liquor and lay down and really don't care whether I wake up or not. So I don't drink and drug today, and I follow the steps and the traditions and the concepts. Why do I follow them? Because I want to keep the life that I have. Today, I'm 84 years young. I got all my own teeth. I don't put my teeth in a glass at night and take them up in the morning and put them back in my mouth. I go to bed with them and I wake up with them. I walk without any apparatuses. And I'm not saying anything against anybody who do, but I am grateful to have drank and drugged for the years that I did, and my body is not failing me. And I am very grateful for that. So I'm not about to pick up a drink or a drug now at this age or even 10, 15 years ago. I am not about to pick up a drink or a drug and dig an early grave for myself. My life is good today. I work at Chatham County Jail. I used to work at Coastal State Prison. I got the job at Coastal State Prison when I was 70. When I was 70 years old, I started working at Coastal State Prison as an alcoholism and drug counselor. I'm an LCSW. I'm a social worker. And I have a master's degree in social work. And I've always worked with alcoholics and addicts. I knew when I went back to school at 6 years sober the population of people I was going to work with. I knew I was never going to work with the disabled. I never was going to work with children. I never was going to work with any other population but alcoholics and addicts. Why? Because I wanted to give back to the world what was so freely given to me. And the more resistant they are, the better I love them. So I go into Coastal State Prison. I'm 70 years young, okay? And I walk in there, because ain't nobody in there badder than me. You know, as far as I'm concerned, ain't nobody in there badder than me. And I let them know who I am. And so I talk to them the way I'm talking to you. I know 75 psychological long words. I learned it when I was in the master's program. But I don't talk to them like that, because that is not what's going to help them to stay sober. What's going to help them to stay sober is for them to see a walking big book. That's what they need to see. A walking big book and a walking 12 to 12. Somebody who is not only talking the talk, but walking the walk. So I go in there and I talk to them. And I love them. I've been a social worker since I got my degree in 1983. I have never worked with a population of people that I love as much as I love inmates. Inmates, I love them. Why? Because they were like me, willing to give up any and everything for a drink. You know, our freedom, my freedom, is all I got. I mean, to be able at 2 o'clock in the morning, if I want to take a walk around my block, if I want to get up and go in my refrigerator, I could sit on my toilet without 18 other girls watching. I have the freedom. The most precious commodity I will ever own is my freedom. But how many times did I give up my freedom for a drink and or drug? How many times did I get locked up simply because I'm drinking and drugging? Just like some of those guys in Coastal and in Chatham County, they're not bank robbers and murderers and kidnappers. They violate probation and parole for a drink. They ain't getting locked up because they getting no big money. Okay, they ain't doing nothing like, you know, robbing somebody and coming away with a quarter of a mil or something like that. They coming out, getting a cheap pint of whatever, drinking it, lay down, and the PO come and pick them up and put them back in jail. That's all they doing. That's what I used to do. That is the power of alcohol and drugs. See, I never negate the power of alcohol. I am as afraid of it. I don't think there's anything on the face of the earth that I am afraid of as much as it is alcohol and drugs when it comes to me. I'll fight a gorilla, but I'm not going to mess with no drugs and alcohol, because I know I'm not going to win. I heard somebody say it's like being in a cage with a horny gorilla. It ain't over till he say it's over. Once I pick up a drink, it ain't going to be over till they say it's over. I could want to stop, but I ain't going to stop. See, what stops Evelyn from drinking and drugging is the police. And I got to see a gun, because if I don't see a gun, I'm running. See, they could stop me, but if I don't see a gun, I'm going to try to run for it. Okay, but if they got a gun, I ain't going to run. Okay, all of these things I used to do, putting my life in jeopardy for a drink and or drug. And today, thanks to this wonderful fellowship and people like Benjamin that comes into this program and stay for 4 years, the women I sponsor, the women who give back to me what I give to them, they don't even know what they give to me. They give to me much more because they go through things and grow through things, and they don't pick up. And I respect that. See, things happen to life is life. And life is going to life, like they say in New York, when life starts lifing. And life is going to start lifing. We're going to lose loved ones. We're going to lose property. We're going to lose a lot of stuff in life. But when we pick up a drink, we're going to lose the ultimate thing, and that's our lives. I'm not taking that chance. I love life today. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I just came back from Vancouver. 40,000 alcoholics and addicts, and not one fight broke out. Not one fight. Because I was, I like a good fight. The minute I see somebody fighting, I'm running to that fight. I want to see what's going on. Not one fight. Everybody acting like they got good sense. It was beautiful. A beautiful, serene thing. So, you know, Rudy, my friend Rudy, he was a member of this group, used to always say, I'm a satisfied customer of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am truly a satisfied customer. And I'm satisfied because of people like Benjamin. You see, people come in 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4 year, doesn't matter. But they stay. Why do they stay? You know, they don't stay. They don't have to come in here and stay. They stay because they know that this is the better life. This is the better way. And so I watch new people. See, I follow people, new people who come in and stay sober. I don't follow people who's running in and out. But people who come in and stay sober, I watch what they do. And I do what they do. When things get tough for me at 53, believe me, being sober 153 years does not exempt you from life's problems. Does not exempt you from life's problems. And sometimes it comes even more because you're more aware. But what do I have? I have steps, slogans, my sponsor. I have a new sponsor now, Francis. Francis is sober 67 years. Okay? And I can call Francis. Francis tell me the same thing Liz used to tell me when I get upset. What step are you not working? I can call them and say, I just had my eye plucked out. I just lost my right arm. And they'll look at me, well, what step are you not utilizing? I can't get no sympathy there. None at all. So I don't even try to get it, okay? Because I know I'm ahead of the game if I don't pick up a drink or a drug. You are ahead of the game if you don't pick up a drink or a drug. We all are ahead of the game. And that is what's important. See, I don't get this in church. I get this from each and every one of you. This is where I get my life is precious and important to me and you. And I get this from you. And whether I believe in God or don't believe in God, you will help me with whatever situation I'm going through. And the first thing you're going to tell me is, don't pick up the first drink. And that's what I do. So, you know, I'm going to end with this. Like I said before, I was 70 years old when I started working. I worked there for 10 years. I retired at 80. I retired 4 years ago from Coastal State Prison. And, you know, I don't know if any of you ever been in prison, but, you know, when you in prison, if you ain't got on the same uniform the inmates got on, you the police. Now, you can call yourself a doctor, a food service worker. You can call yourself anything you want to call yourself. But if you ain't wearing the same uniform they wearing, you the police, okay? And that's the way they look at it. And they knew I wasn't the police, but they knew that I was sober. And they knew my background because I would share it with them. So they had nicknames for everybody, you know. And I cornered one of the orderlies and asked him once. I said, tell me what they call me on the flat top. You know, they got the flat top and Coastal, and then we're down, you know, I'm in the L building, you know. And so he said, oh, Miss Wilson. I said, I'm Bogart. I said, tell me what they call me. He said, oh, Miss Wilson, they call you Gigi. I said, Gigi, they call you Gangster Grandma. So my name in Coastal is Gangster Grandma, and I live up to it. Thank you so much, Benjamin, for asking me to share. I love you. I bless you. I appreciate you. Thank you.